Nick jumped anything he couldn't dodge. The threat of him not jumping or dodging had men diving for cover. Men at games tumbled out of the way, coin and dice flying into the air. Tents pulled up when Nick's legs caught their lines, flew up and billowed in a tangle behind, snaring her pursuers. Horses and riders crashed to the ground. Others ran over their own men in their frenzied attempt to keep her in sight. Kaylin spotted a sword hanging in a scabbard that was fastened to the side of a wagon, and as she ran past, she pulled it free. Galloping past picket lines, she swung the sword, cutting the lead lines. She hacked the rump of one horse as she charged past. He kicked and screamed in fright and pain, panicking the rest of the horses. They bolted headlong in every direction. Lanterns on poles toppled onto tents, setting them afire. The horses in pursuit balked at the fires, rearing and bucking, throwing their riders to the ground. A man lunged suddenly into her path, avoiding Nick's flying hooves and grabbing for her. Kaylin drove the sword home through his chest as she flew by. The hilt tore from her hand. She leaned forward and held on as Nick raced through the endless camp. The men chasing weren't as close, but they were still coming. Suddenly, she was free of the camp, galloping through the open snow. Kaylin followed her own tracks across the flat by the waning light of the moon. The muscular horse plowed through the snow almost as if it weren't there. She reached the trees at last, and before plunging in and ascending the steep slopes, she checked over her shoulder. A good 50 men were not 3 minutes behind. She would be able to open the lead as she went up along the forest trail, but they would still catch her. She would see to that. Chapter 39.
Easy now, she cautioned. One hesitant hoof slipped. Back, 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 come on, boy, back.
From down the slope behind, she could hear the sounds of the chase. A man, probably one of the Dharan officers, yelling angrily at the top of his lungs not to let her get away, and others urging their horses up the steep trail. When they reached the flat where she was, they would be in full gallop again. Kaylin tugged gently on the reins. Nick lifted his hoof from the ice and backed up into the tight gap between the snow-crusted pines back along his trail. She found the long branch with the forked end she had whittled to a pushing pole stuck upright in the snow where she had left it beside the twin-trunked spruce. She hefted it up and started pushing the heavy, snow-laden branches. Her shoulder ached from having the lance shattered as she held it under her arm. As she backed Nick between the trees, off her trail, she held the long push stick out over his head, jostling the limbs. Relieved of their loads, they sprang up, partly screening the gap between the trees. More importantly, the snow tumbled to the ground, piling over her tracks. She pushed at a branch here, another there, sprinkling their snow over Nick's backing trail, covering it in, making it look natural, as if wind had simply freed the branches of their load. She said a silent thank you to Richard for teaching her about track. He had said he would make a woodswoman of her. She ached for Richard. She was sure he wouldn't approve of the desperate risk she was undertaking with the aid of what he had taught her. But she couldn't allow these men to track her back to the Galleon boys. There was a chance that some would carry word of what they had seen back, and then the Galleons would be slaughtered. If none of these men returned, it would be a long while before any more were sent, if ever. Even if they were, by then it would be too late. She would have long been up and over the passes from which she had come, where the wind howled and drifted the snow constantly, and her tracks would be lost to them. They would not know where she had gone. From there, the mountains and forests went on in endless tracts, and her trail would have been last seen leading steadily away from her true destination. Those back at camp would have confidence that these soldiers would have her sooner or later, and with the prospect of plunder only days away, they would turn their attention to it instead. The snow-muffled thundering of hooves brought her mind back to what she was doing. The men had reached the flat and were charging at full speed again. Steadily, she worked her way back into the trees, shaking branches, covering her trail, backing toward the way she had come on her way to the army of the Imperial Order. The sounds of chase were almost upon her. Kaylin leaned almost all the way over, stroking an arm along her horse's neck. She whispered toward his ears, and they swiveled back to the sound of her voice.
Quiet now, Nick. Please, don't move or make a sound.
She stroked his sweaty neck again.
Good boy. Quiet now.
It sounded, to her, as if anyone would be able to plainly hear her heart beating in her chest. The pursuers had reached her. As they charged along her trail, Right in front of her, they broke through the screen of trees to her left, not 10 yards away, at full speed. Kaylin held her breath. She heard the clop of hooves as they hit the sloping ice, hiding in the moon shadows beyond those trees, beyond her false trail. She had led her tracks between those trees to the edge of a steep, rocky stream, where its water would tumble, were it not frozen, over a cliff. It was a small stream, but as it froze, more water had bubbled and frothed over that which was already frozen, growing the area into an ice palace. Snow had been washed away as it fell, leaving the rounded, downward-sloping humps of ice bare and slick. As the men broke through the trees, they had not 20 feet to halt their headlong rush before the cliff's edge, before the rock and ice halted, and only thin air lay beyond. And they had to do it on cascading mounds of ice. Were it flat ice, like a lake, the horses could have dug their iron shoes in and tried to skid to a halt, but this was not flat. It was water-slick, tumble-down ice, and as they slipped and slid and tripped and fell at a charge, they had no chance. Kaylin could hear the pop of horses' legs breaking as thousands of pounds of muscle moving at full speed could not be stopped by hooves catching in crevices. The bareback riders were helpless passengers. The men shouted encouragement to their mounts, and the ones behind didn't recognize quickly enough the change in shrieking from anger to fright. Those behind crashed into those ahead, tumbling over and past each other. Bareback, with only halters and no aggressive battle bits, the riders didn't have the control they were accustomed to and were carried helplessly forward. Some leapt from their mounts as they came through the trees and could see what lay ahead, but their momentum was too great, the distance too short, their fate beyond retrieval. The horses behind, their leg bones snapping, crashed down atop the ones already fallen who were desperately grasping for a hold. There was none. It became a waterfall of living flesh, cascading over the edge. Kaylin sat still, wearing her confessor's face, as she listened to the screams of men and horses mingled together into one long wail as they disappeared over the mountainside. In the span of mere seconds, it was finished. More than 50 men and their mounts had plunged to their deaths. When the night had been silent for a time, she dismounted and circled around to keep her false trail free of any off-leading tracks to the edge of the ice floe. In the dim light, she could see the dark stains of blood over the ice mounds, blood from broken legs, blood from cracked skulls. There were none of the enemy left on the cliff. As she turned to leave, she heard low grunts of desperation. Kaylin pulled her knife and carefully inched her way to the source of the sounds, toward the edge. Grasping a stout limb, she leaned out over the slanting ice floe. Forest debris was frozen in the ice. Sticks and leaves had made a small dam at the edge to be covered over as the ice grew. It left a few branches sticking out of the wall of ice. Around one of these branches were clutched fingers. A man clung by his fingertips to the branch, his legs dangling over a drop of close to 1,000 feet. He was grunting with effort as he tried to catch his feet up on the ice, but it was too slippery to give him any toehold. Kaylin stood at the edge, holding the branch for support as she watched him, shivering. Dribbles of water bubbled over the ice, over his face, matting his hair and soaking his Celtish uniform. His teeth chattered. He looked up to see her standing over him in the moonlight.
"Help me, please. Help me."
He couldn't have been past her age. She regarded him without emotion. He had big eyes, the kind of eyes young women would surely have swooned over. But the young women in Ebenicia would not have swooned when they saw those eyes.
"In the name of the good spirits, help me."
Kaylin squatted down closer to him. "What is your name?"
"Huon. My name's Huon. Now, please, help me."
Kaylin lay down on the ice, hooking a foot around the tangled root, taking a good grip on the stout spruce limb with one hand. She extended her other hand part way out, but not far enough for Huon to reach. "I will help you, Huon, on a condition. I have sworn no mercy and none shall be granted. If you take my hand, I will release my power into you. You will be mine, now and forever. If you are to live, it will be as one touched by a confessor. If you would think to pull me over the edge with you before I can release my magic, let me assure you, I would not make the offer were there that chance. I have touched more men than I can count. You will have no time. You will be mine." He blinked Icy water, dripping down on him from his eyes, shook it from his face and stared up at her. Kaelin extended her hand toward him.
From now on, Huon, either way, your old life is ended. If you live, it will not be as who you are now. That man will be gone forever. You will be mine.
Please,
he whispered.
Just help me up. I won't hurt you. I swear to let you be on your way. It would take me hours to make it back to camp on foot, and you'll be long gone by then anyway. Please, just help me up.
How many people in Ebenezer did you hear beg for their lives? To how many did you grant mercy?
Her words came as cold as the ice she lay on.
I am the Mother Confessor. I have proclaimed war without quarter on the Imperial Order. The oath stands as long as one of you lives. Choose, Huon, death or to be touched by my power. Either way, who you are dies.
The people of Ebenezer got what they deserved. I'd rather take the hand of the Keeper himself than be touched by your filthy magic. The good spirits would never accept me to them if I were touched by your dark and profane magic.
His lip curled in a sneer.
To the Keeper with you, Confessor!
Huon threw his arms open and silently dropped away into the darkness. As she rode back to the Galleon recruits, she thought about the things Riggs, Karsh, and Slagle had told her. She also thought about the creatures of magic living in the Midlands. She thought about the beautiful land of the Night Wisp, with open fields deep in ancient remote forests where the wisps gathered at twilight to dance together in the air above the grasses and wildflowers like joyous fireflies. She had spent many a night lying on her back in the grass as they hovered above her and spoke with her of things common to all life, of dreams and hopes, of loves.